Stringfellow, New York City, March 13.
All right, we're in business.
Well, I think the thing that concerns me now is that the northern city is the frontier, and the prospect is of a great acceleration now of mass, uncontrolled, and unled violence. Seems to me that the watershed of the peaceful demonstrations has been pretty much reached. Was reached really last summer, and the tangible results of the peaceful demonstrations have been so limited in terms of working any practical changes in the lives of ordinary Negroes in the city ghettos, that the issue now arises of whether or not nonviolent tactics work.
Now, is this a matter of decision among leaders, or, as you seem to imply, unled, spontaneous violence?
Yeah,
not policy, but spontaneous outbreaks.
Right.
Without particular objectives, just
right.
Expression.
For example, about a month ago now in Cleveland, in the middle of the winter, which is significant, I think, a Negro boy was arrested. I don't know if the arrest was justified or not, but apparently that touched off a riot reportedly involving 600 or 700 people. Negroes engaged mainly in looting the stores of white merchants and the like. Well, as far as I know, no one planned that. But the frustration of people is so high, so acute, that this apparently little incident was enough to touch it off. And the prospect is, I'm afraid, that there will be more and more and more of that. And there already has been a considerable amount in the North. There have been, if you will, small riots. Now in Minneapolis and in Chicago and New York and Detroit and this thing in Cleveland and Seattle, even Los Angeles, and seems to me that's quite likely to accelerate. And one must remember too that that the Negro Revolution has been nonviolent so far in its tactics and ethics is a rather unique thing. In other great American social revolutions, with the exception, I think, only of the women's suffrage movement, the tactics on both sides have been those of violence. For example, in the labor revolution, or in the Veterans Bonus March in Washington.
Do you think that this violence will spill over into the South?
I think yes, particularly in the parts of the South that most resemble the North. For example, Atlanta.
The big city.
Yeah.
Rather than Mississippi, for instance. Rather than rural Mississippi. Of course, you have violence there now, but
yes.
I'm talking about... mass explosions. The violence is one way now, by and large.
Well, I don't know. It's hard to... It's an unpredictable situation. I mean, conceivably, there could be violence in a northern city, which is so shocking that some real social change results from it. But I'm inclined to think that's unlikely, and that if if there is a...
Which is unlikely?
That that if violence comes, it will have constructive results.
You think it's unlikely that it will have constructive results?
I think it's conceivable that some kind of violence could take place that would be so shocking to the white community that they would get off their butts and really do something.
But you don't think the violence would accomplish that?
No, I think it's more likely that if there's spontaneous violence on the part of Negroes and aggression by Negroes against white people and white stores and white institutions, that the response of the white community will be to suppress that violence, and then we'll really be in trouble. And because I really don't have confidence as a white man that there's enough maturity in the white community to respond in any other way. Though I would say also that if there is Negro violence, that what white people are called to do is not to resist it. Because the only way that violence and hostility is absolved is in voluntary love. But I have not great confidence that many white people are prepared to practice that.
But now, how could you practice that, assuming a riot is underway? And what does the mayor do? Call off the police and say we love them? Them being anybody out on the street, I mean, black or white.
Yeah, well, I think there are two questions. One is, what does the mayor or the police, what do they do? And I suppose they try to control and to stop the violence by whatever means they have at their disposal, by force. But I would distinguish that from whether or not white people who are involved take any action on their own.
You mean the man who owns the store?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or the man who happens to be on the street when something happens.
You mean whether he would just take the knife in the ribs and the brick on the head without fighting back?
Mm-hmm.
There's no discipline for that.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if the Negro demonstrators are trained to this, the man walking down the street has no discipline and no theory.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree.
He can't make it up himself as he goes along
very
well.
I agree. I mean, one would have hoped that there would be the grounds for such a discipline in the churches, in the white churches. I don't really think there is. But that doesn't diminish my belief that that's the only way that that there can be an absolution of the violence.
What practical measures could be taken, let's say in New York City, that would head this off, assuming you had the power to put them into operation, forgetting difficulties and putting things down?
Well, a lot of things. One is, for example, in the school business, as you know, is the current focus here. And I think one very practical measure, step that would be taken, is to fire the president of the Board of Education, Mr. Donovan. He's an able man, and I think a sincere man. And he has a pretty good record on civil rights as these things go. But he has made some very improvident statements that have made him a kind of symbol of the obstinacy of white society to integration. And I think has to be, is just usefulness has been sacrificed and compromised.
All right.
I think so far as the morale of the Negro community is concerned, for Donovan to be dismissed, that would be considered a victory. And in terms now of the issue of forestalling violence, what we need to have is some very concrete things that can be pointed to as signs of progress. Very much the same situation, I think, prevails in Chicago with Superintendent Willis. I don't know anything particularly in detail about him, but he's become a symbol, and even if he now comes forward with some better plan for integrating the schools in Chicago, it's not going to get a hearing because the hostility to him is so
powerful. How much is the busing issue here a symbolic issue, and how much is it a real one that has real value as a remedial measure?
Well, I think it has real value for one reason, particularly. The reason why there are segregated schools, as everyone knows, is because there are segregated neighborhoods, segregated housing. And it seems to me to deal with the housing issue is a much more complicated and long-range issue. I mean, how do you abolish a ghetto? Well, I don't know how you abolish a ghetto, but you don't do it overnight. And so I would say that's a long-range job, and it's going to take 10 or 15 or 20 years, perhaps longer. But that in the meantime, we can prepare some people in the city, in the community, to adjust to and live in integrated neighborhoods and in integrated housing. And one way to prepare some people for that is for them to be as school children in integrated schools. And the only way you're going to integrate the schools, the only way you're going to do that is to get around the existing neighborhood segregation. So you transport kids out of their neighborhood to another school. And I approve of that as a tactical device.
Is the Princeton plan adequate?
I would say no. We mentioned another thing.
Yes.
That is, I would hope that if there were, and what I would like to see if there is the busing of students all over the place, I think it's very important that some white students be brought into Harlem schools as a way of driving home, of bringing to the attention of the white community in a form that they can no longer ignore, since their kids will be affected, the abominable conditions that prevail there. And that, I think, will be very edifying. And maybe in a technical sense, some children in these years will be deprived in their school education. But maybe there's some more important things to learn about. And maybe for a kid and his parents to see the inside of one of those schools is what must be suffered for us to get anywhere. So, you know, the apathy and the lack of concern among the white leadership in New York, including but not only the political administration, is almost ridiculous in its extremes, because they all know, or they've been told, or they've had the facts presented time and time and time again for years and years and years, And yet these conditions persist. You know, like I know one junior high school in Harlem, know of one junior high school in Harlem, where there's such a shortage of classroom space that four or five classes use the auditorium simultaneously. Well, you can't teach a kid anything under such circumstances, because he can overhear what's going on in the other class meeting a few rows away. And kids are kids, and so they horse around and wave to their friends and whatnot. And it's just ridiculous. And yet such conditions persist.
You will find some Negroes, some very thoughtful Negroes, who are activists, too, I know, who said this to me. They're against the busing because it solves nothing. They say school itself is a real issue. The bus is a facade. It has only a symbolic value. And they're actually against it, will say so.
Yeah.
Now, these are people whose integrity can't be questioned, you see. What I know is raised in the Harlem school, educated there. He knows in a way that neither you nor I could know. What he said is quite ridiculous to make this an issue. Needed money for the schools and lots of teachers, lots of white teachers. But the busing is a deception. It deceives the Negroes to make this an issue. I just quote this from this young man, Stokely Carmichael, is the person who said this. Mm-hmm. These words, there are others who said it.
Well, it's no solution to anything, but I do see some of some limited, practical arguments favoring it, like the ones I mentioned,
protection
of housing, and it is a way of further sustaining, hopefully, the nonviolent character of the protest. And may, in fact, be a way in which we get more money for the schools in Harlem. Particularly, as I say, if some white kids have to go to Harlem schools and find out how awful they are, then there will be a new and additional pressure on the school administration to do something about conditions there that they haven't had up to now.
We're up against, then, the matter of father or mother of a family who wants the best for his child. He's quite selfish, but very human way.
Yeah.
My child's not going to fight the busing him to get to the school. I'll welcome any Negro in this school, but I will not let my child be bused if I can avoid it.
Yeah.
That is what is my Negro friend said, and I don't blame him. There's hardly no place to be. He said, I've been and I know, my friend.
Yeah.
This is the problem that is hard to deal with.
But then, my feeling, that is, let the complacency of the white community be disrupted. I mean, all across the board, as far as I can see, the recalcitrant in the racial crisis, the element in society, or the real... represent the real obstacle to public integration. It's not the so-called die-hard Southern segregationists, I don't think. But it's the nice white Northern liberal, with all his sincerity and good intentions and whatnot, who's asking now the question, well, now what do the Negroes want? And fails to realize when he asks that question that he is assuming that it is his prerogative to dispense to the Negro what the Negro will get. And that, I think, is the real essence of white supremacy. And I think it's deeply embedded in the mentality of most Northern, white Northern liberals. And it is that which must be somehow exorcised.
Did you read the controversy between Irving Howe and Ralph Ellison?
I haven't seen that yet.
It bears on this point here.
I just heard something about it.
It's a very important document, I think.
The other thing that's disturbing to me is so little thought, as far as I'm aware, at least, has yet matured in either the Negro community or among white people about how the races can be reconciled. I mean, there can be a certain degree of enforced integration in public institutions, but that is not the same thing as reconciliation, and that's the issue that mainly concerns me. And I guess from my point of view, what is really at the root of it has, in a sense, nothing in itself to do with race. What it really has to do with is whether or not a man is reconciled within himself. If I'm free enough to love and accept myself as a human being, then I have no problem about accepting another human being, no matter what empirical differences there may be between him and me.
Are you speaking as a psychologist, or are you speaking as a theologian when you say this? Or both?
Well, I'm not a psychologist, and I don't know that I'm a theologian, but...
Well, I mean, your role in that, behind that remark, anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, theologically, I would say that's the real issue. And is an acutely threatening one to a lot of people. And one that both Negroes and whites share in common. I mean, part of the problem, surely, of the contemporary American Negro is that he grew up and inherits not just the exile of slavery and sometimes physical and personal suffering of a specific character, but also that many American Negroes acquiesced in the idea of Negro inferiority.
A psychiatrist I know in New Haven tells me that he has some Negro patients, psychoanalysts. Mm-hmm. He says that the shocking thing is to find in analysis or in preliminary investigation this hidden fact. Mm-hmm. The Negro doesn't even know it.
Yeah. And
Sambo is I
think. Well, a number of Negroes who hate themselves, and the way it becomes concretized is they hate themselves because they're Negro. But I think the issue is the same for such a man, essentially the same. It is for a man. What hates himself? For any other reason.
Basically, as an objective focus in this case, that's connected with the visibility and all of that. Is that all right? Given that fact, I assume to be a fact, too, concretely what is to be done as far as the... Let's just keep it on the Negro for a moment. I think it's probably right about the white man. I agree with your diagnosis.
I think there are two levels. There are a lot of practical things that can be done. That might help to create a climate that, in which the, whatever you want to call it, the theological issue or the issue on a more profound level can be resolved. For example, is it not the case that it has now just become a matter of the survival of the nation that there be public integration? And you can't have an economy of this complexity and so on that leaves out of gainful employment and therefore the requisite education and ordinary rights of citizenship. You can't run an economy that leaves out 20 million people. That means, it seems to me, that white men have a profound self-interest in as rapid and as peaceful a public integration as possible. See, if these people are excluded from jobs now with automation and all that, then what's going to happen? Well, the only social alternative is some kind of public assistance, and that's going to be more expensive for me than to advocate and help to provide for them.
That's not merely a race question, though.
No, it isn't. But it's
overlaps.
Acutely affects this particular group in society.
It does indeed. But now let's take, say, X number of jobs and Y number of people, and the Y is bigger than the X. Mm-hmm. You are solving something if you do a ratio, do a proportion, or anything. You're solving something, sure. But you still have something unsolved, something very drastically unsolved. That's a question about
I'm just saying,
yes.
We have to begin where we are, and take another thing, which is we very much need, it seems to me, a citizenry in the country. We increasingly need one that's highly educated and skilled and in which there's more opportunity for higher education and whatnot. Well, among others who need that, and particularly need that, are Negro citizens. But then if you look at the colleges, you'll find now a lot of Southern universities and colleges that are tokenly integrated. But then look at the Northern colleges, and they're also just tokenly integrated. And the main reason, as far as I can see, why that is so, is not because there aren't qualified Negroes already coming out of high schools in a significant number, but because most Negro families can't afford $3,000 a year to send a kid to college, to one of the northern colleges. And so then I would advocate and call it preferential treatment if you want. I would advocate special scholarships and special efforts to recruit large numbers of Negro students.
How much has the Negro faculty been dented, shaken up?
Well, I think very much. That is, it's been what now, almost over 6 years since the peaceful demonstrations and so on have been organized. Demonstrations have been going on, and in the last, say, year and a half, at least here in New York, there's been, I think, a very significant change in the participants in the demonstration. That is, in the early days, it was students and clerks. clergy. But now, like in the March on Washington and the school boycotts here in Chicago, the people who have been demonstrating along with students and clergy and so on have been housewives and women who, middle-aged Negro women who work as domestics, say, and who may well risk their jobs by becoming involved, and who are, I think, naturally conservative about it and apathetic. But they in the, my impression is, in substantial numbers have now become involved, and that indicates that I think that the days of substantial apathy are over, though that may be succeeded by cynicism too, I suppose. But
because of small delivery, you mean?
Yeah.
By the demonstrations.
But that returns to our discussion about violence. That when it really comes to the practical life of some American Negro today, what has he got to show for the nonviolent tactics? Well, the things I think that he remembers and that first come to mind are the assassination of Medgar Evers or the bombing of the church in Birmingham, or the dogs, the police dogs and hoses and billy clubs.